welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 258 of the podcast. And it is the 28th of February, 2016, as I record this. And can you believe it is almost March already? Very scary. Lots of stuff to be doing. So those of you who have been listening for years now, and I know there's a lot of you, may know or may remember, as I've mentioned it before, that I've been a fan of adult colouring books since before it was trendy. And I remember being embarrassed about actually announcing this. And then, of course, the craze happened. And I still use colouring books to coax my inner child out to play before writing sometimes, because it kind of gives your conscious mind something to do while the unconscious starts to unwind. And for us wordy people, doing something with your hands is fun. And getting the felt tips out is always good. And I know those of you with children, just join in with the kids, you know. But now this craze for adult colouring books is super exciting. And today I have an interview with Meg Cowley, who produces and publishes adult colouring books. And we talk about, as well as, you know, just the colouring books, we also talk about turning one book into multiple products, because Meg has colouring notebooks and diaries, as well as the purely colouring books. And also her latest one, the exotic colouring book, gives a percentage of profits to the World Land Trust, and every £100 will fund the purchase of an acre of threatened rainforest. So Meg is both making more money as an author and an illustrator with her books, but also giving money to charity, which is fantastic. I'm also excited to announce that based on Meg's interview and help, and because we recorded this interview over a month ago, I've now published an adult colouring book, which is super exciting, with my dad, Arthur J. Penn, who is a fine artist and printmaker. So I have not done the illustrations inside. So while Meg is a talented illustrator, I am not. But luckily, my dad is a fine artist and printmaker. So we have, and it is now live on Amazon, we have a square colouring book and an A4 colouring notebook based around an English country house and garden, because my dad lives in the Cotswolds in England and bases his images on the country house and garden. And the book has two types of images in it: sketches of country life in the Cotswolds, and also lino cut prints, which is very cool. And so there are plain black and white images, but also images part of this new wave of grayscale colouring, where tonal shade is added to the image. So when you colour it, it looks more three-dimensional. And we're quite thrilled to be ahead of the curve on tonal colouring, tonal shade, or whatever it is called, grayscale colouring. Actually, I've been told that this was actually called grisaille in the 15th and 16th centuries. So it's making a comeback, and it does make the images much more three-dimensional. So I'm going to add all these links in the show notes if you enjoy colouring, or you can just type in pen colouring, either spelling, into Amazon and the books will show up. And so we're going to get into the interview in a bit, obviously. And if you're into adult colouring books, this will be a fascinating discussion on sort of making them. But also, even if you're not doing colouring books, I actually think you'll find this useful, because based on what Meg does and what I've now done, I'm now going to do more print products. So it gave me a whole load of ideas around my nonfiction books. I'm going to do notebooks and workbooks that accompany my nonfiction, which are full of questions for people to answer. So this is sort of one of those revolutionary episodes for me, where the penny dropped on print products. And remember, of course, even if you only make $1 or $2 or pounds on each copy with print on demand, it all adds up and you don't have to do that much. And actually getting a print interior and a print cover designed when you've already, if you've paid for the design of an original book, say like my book Business for Authors, to turn that into a notebook is not that expensive because the design work is kind of done. You just are changing the size of the product and adding in some extra pages. So I hope this will give you some ideas. Of course, if you enjoy adult coloring, I'd love you to check out the books and I'd appreciate any reviews, or you can email me or tweet me pictures of any finished coloring based on my dad's images. And I will be starting a Pinterest board. I will be doing some blog posts on this. So I will be linking back to people's blog reviews, people's images, people's Pinterest boards, that type of thing. So please do email me with any ideas on that or whatever you think. And really, it's very interesting for me to be looking at marketing a print product primarily because I've been very focused on digital and ebooks for so long. And of course, we make a bigger profit, but I'm just, yeah, super interested on how we can use these different products to enhance our businesses. So that, yeah, that's a big thing in my life at the moment, is this kind of penny drop moment. And I'm very grateful to Meg for the interview, as she really helped me with this. Yeah, multiple streams of income. It all adds up. Okay, thanks to everyone who commented and shared the interview with Tola Lope on African authors last week. I've been so happy to see the response. It's been shared really a lot of places. A lot of African-American authors have been sharing it. And also had emails from other authors in other African countries who found it empowering. So really thrilled, you know, whatever country you're in, we can all learn from each other. And, you know, I'm one of these people who hopes we live in a post-racial world at some point, and self-publishing and ebooks and global sales and the exciting world we live in, I think, can help us bridge country and racial barriers. I know I'm a glass half full person, but these are my causes these days, I guess. In personal news, Destroyer of Worlds is now with my editor Jen, who's fantastic, and I've got a whole load of backlog of admin to catch up on, and of course marketing for the coloring book before I finish my edits, and also will be getting to work on the author mindset book. I'm also off to Edinburgh next weekend in Scotland, and will be doing some research for the next novel, which will be totally separate. It might just be standalone or it might be a trilogy, but new characters, new story. And in my head, it's been in my head for a couple of years now, a kind of Taken meets Beowulf mashup. So there we go. We shall see. But that's kind of what's in my head right now. Just a final reminder that I'm doing a webinar with Joseph Michael, the Scrivener coach, this week, and we will be going through how to use Scrivener to write, organize, and export your book into various formats for printing, editing, and publishing. It will be on Thursday, 3rd of March at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. And as ever, if you register, you'll get the replay. And I always learn new tricks from Joe in this webinar. I actually think these webinars are responsible for the increasing use of Scrivener that I have. And wherever you are on the Scrivener scale, you learn something from this webinar, unless you're a super expert. I mean, it really is aimed at people who've never used Scrivener or people who are just starting out with the software. Or if you feel that you're only using 10% of Scrivener, this will be useful to you. So the details for that are at thecreativepen.com/March webinar. So that's thecreativepen.com/March webinar. All the link will be in the show notes. Okay, here's what you've sent me in the last few weeks. Carla Howard says, I listen while driving to work. My situation is a bit different because I have a day job I love, which is fantastic, Carla, but I've always dreamed of writing books, so now I'm doing it. Brilliant. Kathleen says, thanks for the podcast. I've been listening for years and it's always gratifying to me personally to get emails from people who've been listening for years and then they stop lurking and comment or email or tweet me. So thank you for reaching out, Kathleen. I feel like I'm in that period you were 5 years ago when you were still working and writing and trying to balance everything. It's been 3 years for me so far and here's hoping as I go into year four, I'll start getting traction. It's nice to know if I look at your example, I can keep on going and hopefully get somewhere one day if I just keep slogging along. And I really wanted to share this because this is exactly how I feel about people who are in front of me as well. There are always people who started before us and always people who started after us. And I look at, you know, people like CJ Lyons, Bob Mayer, Liliana Hart, you know, people who started years before me, and I look at where they are now and I'm like, yeah, that is going to be me in 5 years' time, 10 years' time. So I'm really thrilled that Kathleen and hopefully others, you know, see my example because yes, you know, 5 years ago, I was still in a day job. I was, you know, working whilst trying to write, trying to build an audience. I was trying to build my email list and still am. You know, these are all things that just take time. And if you just make little steps every day, you will get there. And yeah, that's, it really is just these little consistent things for years. And suddenly you're like, wow, okay, I'm a lot further than I kind of ever thought I would be. And yet I'm still marching onwards. So yeah, super. DC Harrell says, thanks for the regular international focus. Just listen to the interview with Tolu. My Angolan past thanks you. I think you are my first Angolan, DC. Thank you so much. Andy Cumbo Floyd, thanks for your words about encouragement, not competition, between trad pub folks and indies this week. Very grateful. And I'm going to read between the lines there and assume that there has been a bit of argy-bargy between traditional publishing and indies where you are, Andy. And of course, this happens. But I think it's funny. It's like, you know, I meet people sometimes and they go, oh my goodness, you're not a militant like Joe Comrath or Hugh Howie. You know, as people see, you know, because of the very vocal indies out there who are in the news a lot and used as kind of straw men as such, people assume all indies are the same. But I find that by being open and friendly about what being an indie author is, people are really interested in listening. Traditional published authors are interested in listening if you're not going at them in a sort of threatening way. So yeah, I'm continuing that as well. Ellen Bard says, away from my Thailand home, working in Dubai, listening to UK-based The Creative Pen, who I'll see speak in March in the US, #digitalnomad. Thanks for that, Ellen. And yes, I'll be speaking at the end of March at the Smarter Artists Summit in Austin, Texas, which I'm very, you know, I'm really looking forward to. I'm also looking forward to trying the Texas barbecue. you know, it seems to be, I've been watching what is it called? The Chef's Mind or something like that. The Mind of a Chef on Netflix, and seeing some Texas barbecue stuff. And I'm looking forward to that anyway. And I've never been to Texas, so it's my first time there. Super excited. And if you are in the area or want to be, come to the Smarter Artists Summit, smarterartistsummit.com. And that is being run by the self-publishing podcast boys. Nick Stevenson will be there and a whole load of regular, Jim and Brian from Author Marketing Club and Selma Book Show and, just a whole host of people. So I'm very excited about that. English with Kirsty says, I enjoyed listening to your most recent episode while working out on the cross trainer. Nice to have another author at the gym. Monica Rodriguez, I was thrilled to add new authors to my to-read list based on your interview with Tola Lope. And that's fantastic. I've actually, I have been reading some of the Nigerian authors as well. So very exciting. And of course, once you start reading different authors, so as soon as you start looking into the authors, say if you start with the ones on the interview from last week with Tolu, the links are all in the show notes, you will then find in the also bought list a whole load more. And that's really interesting. I love finding these other sort of sub niches within Amazon. Jack Arbert says, bravo for letting Adam Croft pick apart your Facebook ad. Very brave. My favourite podcast yet. Thanks, both of you. Thanks for that, Jack. And yes, it's always tough to have one's own ads critiqued, but that is how we learn. So there you go. So as ever, please do email me or tweet me with what you're doing while listening to the show and any pictures of where you are. And I really love the interaction we have these days on the podcast, and I appreciate you getting in touch. I know sometimes I'm slow on replying to emails, but I read them all, and I'm super pleased that, I love the way the podcast has sort of grown and changed over the last year. And thanks so much for interacting. Okay, so today this podcast episode is sponsored by 99 Designs, and you can get a power pack upgrade worth $99, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed by going to 99designs.com/Joanna, Joanna. So on 99 Designs, you can get all kinds of designs for your author business, including book covers, merchandising, branding and business cards, illustrations, artwork and much more. Essentially, it works by you add your design brief. For example, if you're doing a book cover, add what goes on the front, the title, subtitle, author name, the back, the spine. Then also things like genre, your emotional feelings, resonance, cover ideas from your genre. And I always include screen prints of other books that I want to resonate with. Once you have lots of submissions, you give feedback, leave comments. And if you make your contest public, you'll get different riffs off other designs. If you make it blind, you'll get more originality but fewer iterations. You can then do a poll to your social media or email list and then pick the winner, get the files, and you're done. Now, I have a book cover designer who I'm really happy with, but I've used 99 Designs for custom illustrations, both The Key to the Gates of Hell, which features on the cover and the interior of the book of the same name, and also the map at the front of Dark Fantasy thriller Risen Gods, which I'm just listening to the audio of at the moment. And I'm really, it's funny, I think when we first put out a book, we're really tired of it and we know it too well. But after a time passes, we can listen, like I'm listening to the audio, I'm like, do you know what? This is quite a good book. So I'm kind of in love with Risen Gods again at the moment. But anyway, the cover, the map at the front of the book is of Aotearoa, New Zealand, and all the things that happen were done on 99 Designs. So very thrilled about that. You have 100% money back guarantee. You don't have to pay if you don't get a design you like. And as ever, I think your book cover design is the best marketing asset you can have. So well worth investing in. Okay, so you can get the Power Pack upgrade worth $99, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed by going to 99designs.com/Joanna, Joanna. So this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks especially to new patron Eliza Peak. And the extra Patreon-only Q&A went out last week, which is 30 minutes of me answering your questions from Patreon supporters. And if you support the show on Patreon, you will get all the extra recordings so far, which we're up to nearly 2.5 hours of extra audio Q&A. You can support the show with just a few dollars a month, and you can do that at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. And thank you as ever for the Patreon support. It really demonstrates that people enjoy the show and want it to continue. And as ever, thank you all for listening. Let's get on to the interview with Meg. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from The Creative Pen, and today I'm here with Meg Cowley. Hi Meg.
Hello.
It's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Meg is an author and illustrator. She writes the fantasy series Books of Caladan and also writes and illustrates the children's book series Diary of a Secret Witch. And now Meg has a range of adult colouring books, which is what we're talking about today, which is super exciting. But Meg, just start by telling us a bit more about you and how you got into writing and illustration.
Okay, I suppose like most people, I've done it since forever. You know, as soon as I could pick up a pencil, I was drawing. As soon as I could write, I was writing stories. They were quite bad, all the illustrations and all the stories. But, you know, when you keep at something, you eventually get better. The first book I wrote was the first book of Caladan, and that just sort of popped into my head and I just had to write it down. And, you know, like many first novels, it's a very long and convoluted process until you sort of learn what you're doing, and then it gets a bit easier and faster from there on in. And I mean, it really helped discovering you, to be honest, about probably just over 3 years ago I found you, and that's where the penny dropped and I thought, hang on, I could actually get these books out into the world. And, you know, I made the business decision that actually I didn't want to traditionally publish and that I did want to do this as an independent author. And that's where it started. And then, I focused on the writing for a bit. And then once I found out about adult colouring books, again, it was like, wow, well, I love drawing. I've drawn for so many years and done a little, you know, a few commissions and things like that, but mostly just personal art. And then it was a thing of, well, I could do this. I could illustrate that project and I also know how to publish it. Why the heck not? Let's give it a try. And luckily it worked out. So that's something I'm really happy to focus on for the next few months.
Hey, so I'm really interested, and I specifically wanted to talk to you around adult colouring books, which you know, been very kind to come on and talk about. So 2015 was a big year for you, wasn't it? So tell us what happened and why you got into this area and how it went.
Well, to be honest, at the end of 2014, I had just published my first fiction book, and I was maybe hoping to publish the sequel in 2015, but I hadn't really planned out anything other than that. And unfortunately, my health was quite poor last year due to a number of things that happened in 2014. So I wasn't really in a good place to write. I find that I need a lot of a clarity of thought, I suppose, to write, and, you know, a clear head, nice environment, good health, things like that. And then it the words kind of flow. But for drawing and things, I find that easier. If my head's thick, it just kind of comes. It sounds really weird. It just flows. And my friend suggested to me, I'd already heard of adult coloring, but she was like, why don't you do one? And the more I thought about it, the more I thought, I actually could. So I thought, well, I'll start drawing one and just see what happens. So I planned out the wild coloring book, which was my first one. I thought it would be a year of nature in the British Isles. So is that the coffee I sent you?
Yes, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. A year of nature in the British Isles. So lots of plants and animals that you might see in the British Isles. And I thought, well, yeah, let's give it a go. And the first one came out, and I admit I didn't follow it up as quickly as I ought to have done. I think a key lesson from, you know, generally indie publishing is get everything out as fast as you can, you know, be a productive machine, really. So that's what I'm trying to do this year, is to keep up that production schedule. But once I saw how well it had gone, I mean, it was a punt. It was, I'll stick it out there and see what it's going to do. I thought, well, let's follow it up. So that's when I did my second one, and now I'm working on my third one. And the sales are really encouraging. It's really nice to find a niche of the market where I can actually produce something that I feel is a good product, and I can also make an income from it. Something that I'm really keen to do is keep my integrity. I said this to you the other day, that I have to believe in what I'm doing to be able to convincingly do it, I suppose, rather than just going into niche where they sell well, but I might not necessarily enjoy or be good at doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is amazing. Can you give, you don't have to give figures, obviously, but an indication of how much better the colouring books have been for you than the fiction sales?
Oh, astronomically, like thousands of percent. for example, today I've sold about 4,000 books in total. So this is going from July 2014, so it's like 18 months or so. I don't particularly do any marketing, so I know it could be better. That's one of my 2016 goals, learn how to market stuff. But out of about 4,000 books, about 3,800 are colouring related. So
That's awesome. Oh no, it's really good.
It is. Not for my fiction, but yeah, it's good for the colouring.
Well, and I think that's important. And you mentioned integrity. So what we're not suggesting in this interview is that people go and get stock photos from free websites and turn them into kind of crappy colouring books. That's not what we're saying here. No. And,
there have been a few webinars about that, and I would steer away from that.
Yeah, and I think that's true of, you know, the indie market in general. There's always going to be people who are trying to jump on bandwagons. But I'm someone who does colour as an adult, and you're someone who, you know, produces these books in a, you know, with integrity. And, you know, coming clean on this, as you know, telling the audience, my dad is an artist and he's interested in producing a colouring book. So, he's an artist first and now only considering doing this later. So let's
get, which is what I was too. It's trying to think about new niches that you can, you know, do the same thing in, I guess. Which
yeah,
it's great, the opportunities that are there.
Yeah, and he sells his artistic. So each of these are their lino prints on paper. So they are individual artworks. But of course, they are, when they're individual artworks, they're not scalable. Whereas put them in a book and a colouring book or whatever, they are immediately scalable. So it's a, very good idea if you own images that are suitable. So first of all, can we just talk about the suitability of an illustration? So what are, because, you know, people will immediately have in their head all kinds of different pictures, especially if they don't colour. So what are the best types of illustrations for these colouring books? What makes a good adult colouring book?
Firstly, steer away from everything you know about colouring books. You know, so most people think of colouring books and children's colouring books. So very simplistic images, lots of big spaces, thick lines. And adult colouring books are a whole new dimension to that. So first and foremost, you're going to be working in black and white. You can't really print the gradients very well, so it's just better not to bother. And also, it's quite important not to give your colourists, the people who are going to be colouring your book, any preconceptions about what they ought to do and how they ought to colour your images. So if you're adding the shading in, you're actually saying, hey, I want you to colour my image this way, and actually take your emotions out of it, because they're going to do their own thing with that piece. So black and white. I'd say you can work traditionally or digitally. So I have a digital graphics tablet, which is basically like drawing onto a digital canvas. So it's not about taking images that are already online and things. It's about creating your own from scratch, basically, whether you do that in a digital or traditional medium. I use pencil sketches, and these are really good brands of pens. I don't know if you can see them, but these are Staedtler fineliners, and they're really, really good. The quality of the ink is fantastic. So you want to be using decent quality materials, like with anything, to create them. And you can kind of, as long as you have the tools to make your images digital, so as long as you can scan them into a computer, if they're not already drawn digitally, there's really no limits to what you can do. I would say definitely pick a theme. No one really wants to colour a robot and then a flower. So the themed books tend to do really well. Some people might, all right, but most people don't. So the themes tend to do really well. So if you've got a flower book or a mandala book, that kind of thing. The only thing I would say there is be really conscious of copyright. So, for example, something I would love to do a Lord of the Rings colouring book or a Harry Potter colouring book, but I cannot touch them for copyright reasons, because I will be selling someone else's characters, even though it's my artwork. So you've got to be quite original in what you're selling.
You could do fantasy characters book and do your own characters from your books of Caladan, for example, which might be a kind of crossover niche.
That is possible, and it's something I could consider, but I also like to try and think of things that are going to be commercially viable as well. So I'm mixing integrity with sensible business decisions. So what do I want to do, and what's going to make enough money for me to pay my bills? So that could be great. If Books of Caladan becomes like a Harry Potter movie sensation, I'll be there. I'll be making a colouring book. But for now, I'm going to leave that one. The last thing I was going to say about creating the book, moving away from children's book to adult's book, is be really careful about your use of negative space. So you don't want too many lines. You don't want too few. So people want a variety of images in terms of complexity. Some, you know, they might want to do a really finely detailed piece, and others they might not. But what you want to get away from is having too much black space or too much white space in your books as well. So not too many lines, and you're not filling it in for them, because that tends to really annoy people when they're like, I've bought this book, but half of it's black and I can only colour in these tiny gaps.
Yeah, so, yeah, and that's one of the problems with my dad's stuff. But what we're thinking about is scanning the images and then removing some of his lines to make it a kind
that
of...
That would be perfect.
Yeah,
exactly.
To make it a so sparse image.
Yeah, you could definitely adapt it. Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, because you have to, a drawing, an illustration, any kind of artwork has the same copyright as any other work, right? So in order to adapt, you know, my dad's work, he can't sell it to someone else and then adapt it himself. He has to own the rights to that work. So that's really important, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I would say be really careful with your own artwork, what you do with it. So if you do sell your artwork, are you selling the copyright to that image? You need to understand what you're selling. Are you selling the rights for people to use that work? In what context? I looked at licensing some of my artwork out. That can also be a really, really good method of income for particularly colouring book pages, because there's a lot of magazines out for colouring at the moment. They've all gone, oh, hey, this is the thing. We can make a lot of money. Let's do that. Now they license images from online libraries, and they're also starting to try and find illustrators as well, because they've realized that all the other magazines are licensing the same images from the same libraries. So to try and, you know, differentiate themselves and be a bit different, they're going to artists now. But you have to be so careful about what you're giving away, because generally they will let you keep the copyright to your images, which is perfect. But they stipulate that maybe you have to be exclusive with them for a certain period of time, or you can't print it in any other context, or perhaps they're getting, you know, rights to print it worldwide for as long as they like. And you have to be really careful with that, because you don't ever want to give someone all your artwork for as long as they like. You want to be able to get it back. Like with any publishing contract, you want to think, okay, when are the rights going to come back to me? So there's a lot of things you can do with selling your artwork on, but you've got to be really, really aware of what your rights are and what you're giving away and keeping.
And then I just wanted to follow up on the your tablet. Just tell people what the actual specific tablet is. Is it a Wacom? Is it, or, you know, what is it specifically?
I'd grab it, it's a little bit far away, but yeah. My baby is a Wacom Intuos 4, so it's about this big, and the active area is 6 by 8 inches. It comes with a normal size pen, which is called a stylus, because that's more fancy, and you basically draw on it, and it creates the same thing that you're drawing on the screen. It has pressure sensitivity, so it's just like using real pens and pencils. If you're pressing harder, there's a bigger blob on the screen, but you can do so much more with it, because you can do different brush types, sizes, colours, transparency. It's awesome. I use that in conjunction with Photoshop. That's always been the programme that I found best to illustrate on. I doubt it was intentionally intended as an illustration program, but it's versatile, it's enough to do it, and I find it's just awesome. That's what I use.
That's fantastic. Okay, so next, so that covers the method of illustration, I guess, and how to just more about the specific image. So whether you scan it or you do it directly into the software, does it need to be, and I'm not very good on this, is it a vector image where it's a scalable size, or what format does the image need to be in order to put it into a book?
Don't laugh, but I really don't use vectors.
What do you use?
I scan it in, or if I'm drawing in a digital canvas, it's as if I'm just drawing on a piece of paper. I create it in 600 dpi resolution, so that's 600 dots per inch, and I always make sure that the size of the image is the final size in the book. So for example, 20 centimeters by 20 centimeters at 600 dpi. The recommended printing dpi is 300. So I use CreateSpace, and they have printed out images for me at 199 dpi, and I found that there is no loss of quality on that, but I tend to err on the side of caution, and I would say, you know, go a bit higher if you can, or a minimum of 300 dpi. Now I use JPEG files or PNG files, so, you know, dead simple, dead straightforward. Most image software should be able to render those. and I basically insert them in a Word file. I format all my books in Word, stick it as a PDF, upload it to CreateSpace. Away you go.
Easy peasy. What's brilliant is you are basically using the apart. I mean, obviously, does the illustration itself? That's where your art is. But you're using the most basic method of publishing possible, aren't you?
Literally, yeah. It's like. Idiot's guide right here.
No, but that's fantastic because it's, you know, what they would call the minimum viable product in the startup community. But obviously I think the important point to stress there is that you're creating the images at the size for the book you're already writing or creating. So for my dad, for example, his prints, some of them are A3 size, so we need to scale them down to
I don't think CreateSpace do an A3 book.
No, exactly. So we have to somehow scale them down. And also another benefit of getting a thing like a vector image is that we could put those same images on a mug or a business card or that type of thing.
To be honest though, I wouldn't have any problem with doing that without, I mean, I don't vector my images at all and I don't have any problem. The rule of thumb is as long as you've got a decent DPI and a decent file size in pixels or centimetres, whichever dimensions you're using, you can translate it to other formats. So why I tend to start big is that it's then suitable to use for other formats. So the illustration is the biggest thing. That is the same size as the cover. So I can then use it for the cover and colour that in. Mm. I can then scale it down for things like business cards, mugs. It's quite versatile. So if you make it, it's hard to go from small to big. It's easier to go from big to small. Yeah. So if you make it bigger, you can do a lot more with it.
That's great. You mentioned there about the cover and colouring it in, because you do notice some of these covers are kind of half coloured in, like you're going to colour in the rest of the book. Is that...
That's what I did with mine.
which is great. And I can see the marketing angle of that. It's like, yes, this is a colouring in book. I guess there aren't any rules, though. Like, we could still do a black and white cover. It's not necessary. Mm-hmm. But do you have any like, from all the books you've seen, are there any other tips around the cover itself?
Color.
Oh, right.
Definitely color. I would say it's the same sort of thing as publishing a fiction book. You don't want a lot of white space, because white space blends into the web page. You want something that's going to pop and make someone's eye stop and think, that looks nice, I'm going to click on that, at thumbnail size, obviously. I would say definitely have a pop of colour. I did experiment with my second book, doing it in full colour as I did with my first one, but I actually found that when I looked at it, it was just a bit too much. It was a bit overpowering. So I ended up just doing a little circle of colour in the middle, and that worked for me. I thought, that's aesthetically pleasing. That's going to be eye-catching. So I think it does depend on the artwork that you're using, but I would say that colour tends to rank higher. The duller the cover, the lower they seem to rank when I pull through. I'm really sad when I go through all the Amazon listings of colouring books.
No, you're not sad, and we'll come back to that because it's really, really handy. So I've just got lots of random questions here, but how many pages do you need, and do you print on both sides?
Right, this is where you have to be really, really aware of your audience and what they want. So again, it depends how much you want to print. You can really do a short book or a long book, whatever you want, but I would say price your work accordingly. So I do around 30 images in my books, but I price it at significantly less than the books that have got a lot more images in. So to represent that, what you're getting, and offer fair value for that. So you can really hit whatever you want, but I'd say a good place to start is about 20. When people buy a colouring book, they don't want a couple of pieces of paper to do. They want quite a chunk. And then how you format it is really quite important. So this is where I've been through loads of popular colouring books and unpopular ones, and read the reviews and seen what people actually thought of them. And that was the most important thing I did when I was deciding how to format the book, basically, because they showed me what not to do. So every complaint in every review, I was thinking, right, log that. I'm not going to do that. So, for example, I would say don't print on both sides of the paper. Now, part of that is due to the paper quality that you will get if you are printing on demand, because it's not as thick as a traditional publisher might be able to do. But generally, people might want to cut out that image when they've finished with it and frame it.
Oh,
and if you've got an image on the back of that, yeah,
wow.
Oh yeah. And if you've got an image on the back of that, they're then having to sacrifice an image, and that really annoys people because they're like, I've bought a book, I want to enjoy all the images, but instead I'm having to enjoy half of them. Especially if you're using materials that are going to bleed through a page as well, you're essentially destroying what's on the other side. So I'd say definitely do one-sided, because then people can cut them out, present them, or they don't have to choose at the very least between what's on both sides. So following on from not drawing into the spine or the edges of the page, because people struggle to colour it all in, again, going across both pages as well. There's nothing more lovely than opening up a colouring book to hear, to see this beautiful double page spread, but you can't colour the middle of it. It's really annoying for people, so don't do it. So, yeah, there's all sorts of practical implications that you have to think about when you're designing it, because ultimately what you're doing after you've drawn the artwork is trying to figure out what the end consumer of that product wants and giving it to them. So you have to stop thinking like the artist who's drawing the images and start thinking like the colorist who's going to color them, and what do I want to sit down and do when I open my coloring book up. So I'd say that also going back to what I said at the beginning about making sure you've not got too much positive and negative space, make sure that you've got a range of complex designs. So some people, sometimes they just want to colour in a really big space because they can't be bothered doing all the detail. And other times that's going to really annoy them and they want to get into the little nitty gritty bits. And so if you give them a variety of designs where they can do one or the other or both, then people are going to be a lot happier. And I've seen reviews sort of both ways saying, oh, it's too complex, it's not complex. So again, give them a mix. And the last thing I tried, which seems to work quite well, and I've not seen any other coloring book do this, is using a tester page. So right at the front of my books, I put just a blank page with sort of an invitation to scribble on it, you know, try out your materials, try out your coloring techniques. And it means that people don't have to choose an image to sacrifice with a potentially bad material or coloring technique. They can just go and do it on that page. And I'm sure most people have a spare piece of paper, but if not, then again, you're giving them the solution right there. So it's about trying to, if there are any problems, fix them right in your book.
And then on that, do you write anything in the book? So like, do you have a, you know, well, like a welcome page or anything about you the artist, you know, like an end matter, or, you know, yeah, what do you actually put in the book apart from images?
So yeah, I do all those things. I put an introduction at the front, which is basically saying, hey, welcome to my book, I hope you enjoy it. And I like to point out all the little things I've done for them, like not drawing into the spines in case they want to cut the artwork out and things like that. So if they haven't thought about it, you might give them a nice idea. And if they have, they think, oh, ain't she sweet? She's caring about what me, the colourist, wants. So I think that helps build a nice relationship with the colourist, because they feel like you're not just some mass-produced book, you actually care about their enjoyment of the product, and this is about their enjoyment really, because colouring is a luxury, I suppose, and a therapy for some people. So if you make them feel like you care about them, then that, you know, increases their enjoyment of the book. And yeah, I do stick the usual, hi, you know, this is a bit about me at the end of the book, and please leave a review at the end of the book. So
yeah, which is fantastic. And of course, we're going to give your, this is Meg Cowley, everybody, and you can go and buy her colouring books and model. We all model success, so this is very important. But just back on the theme there, because I just remembered, of course, a lot of people do this for therapy, and in fact, pretty much all the all the colouring books in the shops have, you know, garden colouring book for enhancing your calm or for stress relief.
Do you, keywords.
Yes. Well, this is what I was going to ask you. So, and all, they also have adult colouring book on the front as well. Yep. So what have you found are the best kind of ways to do that? Is it literally, because everybody's got calm and mindfulness and all that.
I know, right?
You know what I mean? Is it just a case of fitting into that niche at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just grab one of my books. So I have, this is one of my books, and it's the Calm keyword, colouring book, creative keyword, art therapy keyword, for adults, keyword. And the series is called Colouring Books, keyword, for adults, keyword. So basically what you're trying to do with your title is think, what's going to get me noticed on Amazon? So this is where you sit and type into the search bar on Amazon all the things that you can think of with colouring, and you can sort of pick up on the keywords that are going to come out, and that's what you try and stuff in your title and your keyword and your seven keywords and all the rest of it. So I would say, yeah, go with, as much as they're overused at the moment, go with them, because that's what's going to get you noticed. That's what's going to get you selling.
Yeah, absolutely. You can't avoid this type of thing. And essentially, it's a non-fiction book. I mean, weirdly, it is a non-fiction book. And we know that you have to have keyword titles for non-fiction.
I've seen them ranked in some bizarre category, honestly. And people say, oh, I'm ranked number one. And I'm thinking, yes, in a completely weird category. But, you know, if you can get into them, go for it.
Hypnosis or something.
Exactly, yeah. I was... I think both of mine are top 10 or something like that in self-help. But it is a self-help book, so that's quite helpful to rank.
Yes, and in fact, I was thinking about this because I think my dad's is going to be an English country garden, you know, house and garden type of thing. It's very gardeny and English. And, yeah. You know, that could, you know, go into a gardening category as much as it doesn't have to go in colouring books, does it? That's the thing. It can go across genre as such.
Yeah, the only thing you're limited by is the BISAC codes, really. So I put mine in self-help / creativity. There are some other ones that I would like to get into, but because they don't have a code for it, I can't get into them. Like the colouring books for adults category, it doesn't have a code that CreateSpace will accept, or it didn't last time I checked, which sounds ridiculous, but you kind of have to work with what you've got. But yeah, you could definitely get into some really obscure niches.
But it's interesting. I mean, obviously, this is a colouring book, so it doesn't make sense to have an ebook version. But do you have an ebook version anyway? Well, because then you can get into these other categories.
I would say no to an ebook, because if you do it, for example, with KDP, what you're actually going to be giving people is a book that they can't print and they can't colour. So it's more of a viewing piece, which I suppose might be quite nice, but it's not really the point of it. The point is a colouring book. Now, the way around that is to do a print your own copy. So, for example, I'm set up on payhip.com, which is one of many platforms that you can do where you basically sell a PDF copy, which you can discount off the paperback, so people are getting a good bargain. People can print as many copies as they want, so obviously they can get quite good value for money off that, and they handle the nitty-gritty things like paying you. Super high royalties, like 90%, and they handle EU VAT and all that kind of thing. So that's the way around it, but then you're off the mainstream platforms like Amazon, so you're really sort of using your own popularity and
you have to have a well-trafficked website really for that.
Absolutely. So I don't particularly market those, if I'm honest, but they're kind of like, oh, they're here if you want them kind of thing.
Like an extra thing. That's good. Okay, right, let's talk about publisher, because my immediate thought was CreateSpace, which is great, is still not the best, as you said before, it's not the best paper quality. And the top, you know, the number one best-selling colouring book, which I also have, the Joanna Basford one, Secret Garden.
I have it too.
Yeah, everyone has it. That's why it made £500,000 last year. The paper quality is exceptional, isn't it? And I don't think there's any bleed with even kind of thick colouring pens, but we can't do that because it's way too expensive to be able to produce a book like that. So what investigations have you done around paper, and what have you ended up with?
It's really hard because you have to choose between the two camps. You either get the product that you want with zero just distribution and you sit on 2,000 copies and try and sell them, which no one should do, really, because that's just really a bad idea, as you frequently say. Or there's the other camp, which is you kind of make the best of what you've got. So there's CreateSpace, obviously. They have the one paper choice between cream and white. That's it. That's the thickness. So if you've handled any paperback book, that's the thickness of paper you're working with. Now, it is suitable for colouring crayons and water-based inks, but alcohol markers you will struggle with. So I really like alcohol markers. They are the most versatile, which is really frustrating, but they bleed on this paper. So you kind of have to compromise there. I did also look at Ingram Spark. Now, that was more to get into bookstores because the first thing I thought was, Clurian books are everywhere. I don't want to be limited to Amazon. I want to be getting into my local Waterstones, my local independents, that kind of thing. Now, CreateSpace, you'll struggle with that because the publishers cannot get the margins that they want. And you cannot get the margins that you want, you know, simultaneously. So I thought, okay, maybe I should consider Ingram, where they can give the bookshops the margins that they do want to persuade them to stock them. But when I went into the bookshop, and this was well before I published, this was probably just over a year ago, just to see what colouring books they had in, I saw the paper quality and I thought, I can't put my book next to that. So I thought, right, okay, let's steer away from going into bookshops at the moment and stick with Amazon. And I know that Amazon is a great marketing vehicle. You shared an article a few weeks ago about, what was her name? Oh, there was the colouring book artist who'd made like $500,000 or something self-publishing through Amazon. I think I've got it written down somewhere. Janine Morrison, that's it. Mm. So it's quite clear that you can do it online only. But there isn't really a way to do it and get into bookshops and have that quality product. It was a shame.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And like you say, you have to make that choice at this point. But have you had complaints or bad reviews around paper quality that have affected sales, I guess? And we all get bad reviews, so that's not an issue. But has that happened?
So I had to make a choice between creating this luxurious quality product or creating a more affordable, budget-friendly version based on the materials that I had to use. So that was what I had to do, but I reflected that accordingly in the price. So whereas the market leaders, RRPs, are about £10 or upwards, mine are priced at £5 or thereabouts. To reflect that, you're actually paying for a more budget product, and I think that's been well received. I think people, prolific colourers, perhaps I should say, appreciate the fact that they can buy and colour, and it's not going to break their bank. So there's just the one review that I've had about the poor paper quality, and that's it.
Well, that's great. And I think by putting that stuff up front about testing, like, people haven't ruined, you know, some of the pages. So that's really super. And I also, you have Square, don't you? How's that, you know, why did you choose Square rather than a different size?
In the second book, I chose circles, to be honest. Might do triangles next. It just the illustrations that I was doing fit a square quite nicely, whereas the illustrations in the second book that I've done fit a circle quite nicely. So it was just sort of going with the flow.
The print size, yeah. You did was a square rather than of a book shape. Yeah.
Again, it was just the illustrations that I were doing. They looked quite a lot nicer as a square rather than a rectangle. So I thought, rather than creating a rectangular book with a square image in the middle, I would be better just creating a square book. But there are some people who do A4 or, you know, that sort of ratio height to width books, and they work quite well too. So you've got a bit of versatility to choose what you want to do with them, to be honest.
Yeah, no, fantastic. Okay. So I'm just trying to think what else we have. So let's just talk about we've talked a bit about the pros and cons of indie in terms of, you know, if you get a traditional deal for a colouring book right now, you could have that really great quality, but it might take 6 months, really to get out there. So what are the other sort of pros and cons of indie have you found?
I think the key one that you've just mentioned is speed to market. Indies have definitely got the edge when it comes to that. I mean, Joanna Basford is releasing her next book in, I think, this August it's scheduled for. And by that time, I'm hoping I can put three more out. So and I think this seems to be a common thing that indies are trying to push the boundaries. It's not, I've got this book ready, I'm going to sit on it for a year. I've got this book ready, I'm going to publish it now. And that's the freedom that we have. So these books are really easy to create. Once you've actually done the illustration, the formatting is so simple that you could literally upload the formatting to CreateSpace, and I think the record that I've had is I've uploaded it on a Sunday morning. It's been on Amazon by midday, and I've had it in my lap on the Tuesday. which is amazing.
It is absolutely amazing. Yeah, and of course, absolutely. And of course, you mentioned the distribution to bookstores. And you know, I am considering looking into Ingram Spark, but I'm kind of with you in that even if you end up going with Ingram Spark and you pay for the best quality you possibly can, then your royalties are going to be very small with the discounting and everything. And then plus, you probably still won't be able to get the quality of a Joanna Basford. So why go to the 80% and lose the money? Whereas, you know. It's a difficult thing though.
It is really difficult. Yeah,
that is tough. But I'm really interested in you know, probably what I'll probably do is order a couple of, you know, different price points and see the quality. I think that's the aim, isn't it? Here, just order.
I think the best thing I did was go into the bookshop and just handle and look at what they actually have, because that was a massive eye opener for me to think, right, that's what I'm up against in the real world. So yeah, definitely. But we also have a lot more versatility as indies, so we can push out a lot of different products as well, which I think gives us a great edge. So we can still be putting out quality products. All right, paper quality is not the most fantastic, but as far as the actual content goes, we are up there. You know, we can be just as good as all the other people who are publishing them, but we can also create more diverse products. So this is something that I'm using to diversify my income streams.
Yeah,
the business
fantastic.
Side of me is like money, which is what it's the internal struggle of every indie. It's I want to create this wonderful thing, and the other half is like, yes, but I need to pay my mortgage.
Yeah, show us your diversified portfolio.
Sounds like a stockbroker. So this is my second colouring book, which was the Calm colouring book. Now, I also brought this out as a 2016 diary, and this has been really successful. This actually outsold my first colouring book in December by far, and I actually get a better margin on it as well, so that's quite nice. I also brought it out as an A4 notebook as well. So both of these have all the illustrations in that the Calm colouring book do, but they also have the extra benefits of, in this case, it's got notebook paper, about 100 pages worth. And then this one is a week per page diary as well. So with all the extra things that you'd expect from a diary. And it's been really well received. It's been so well received, because again, this was a punt, that I went back and did one for my first colouring book as well. And that's already started selling. I kind of sneakily published that a week ago, and it's already starting to trickle in. I haven't told anyone about it yet.
I love this. I think this is amazing, because what you've done is just shrink those colouring things down on the page and then fill the rest of the page with like blank lines for a notebook.
Yeah.
Or you've presumably downloaded some kind of template of the 2016 diary.
I handmade that.
Oh, you handmade it. That's lovely.
No. I'm actually using this one as well, and you're gonna laugh because look what I've started doing this year. My little sticker reward chart.
Awesome. So you've got stickers in there too. And have you thought about creating stickers from your artwork to sell as well?
That's something in there. I mean, once you start thinking about what else can I put the images that I have already drawn on, like you just start to think of so many things. I think you've got to be careful because you could literally stamp everything.
Yeah.
So you're trying to think about, okay, what's going to sell? Because I would love to make stickers. That'd be amazing, but probably not many people would buy them unless they were on Amazon. But yeah, I'm trying to think of different projects that I could do. One that I did think of was, and this is quite funny, and you can't do it, unfortunately, was just a blank notebook. So completely blank pages with a lovely like motif sort of cover. Unfortunately, Amazon doesn't let you print more than 3 blank pages in a row. I don't know if you've ever had that telling off from them.
Okay, but you could do 3 blank pages, then a colouring in, 3 blank pages, then a colouring in.
Yes, you could.
And I mean, this is the thing, and this is what's so brilliant, because I write wordy books, and you can't do, I mean, yes, there are multiple formats, ebook, print, audiobook, but you know, then it's adaptation into screenplay or whatever. But I love this. I love this image stuff. I think it's brilliant. I'm going to have to start doing some art classes or something.
Definitely. But this is what I was trying to do, because it was trying to create that model of multiple input in income streams. Like you have the little infographic where you've got your one book and then it turns into an ebook and a print and an audio book, and then times number of languages, times number of countries. I was thinking, well, I can't make an audio book of a colouring book, or I can't make an ebook, what else can I do with it? Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, there's quite a lot if you just sit down and have a think, and even just trying to think as a writer or an artist, what do I actually want? And then thinking, oh, well, maybe I could do that myself. And mm-hmm. I think that's the greatness of the indie world. It's sitting down and thinking, oh, I need this. I can solve that problem myself. Oh. So I'm really enjoying the diary because it's got in everything that I want in a diary.
That's absolutely brilliant. What I wanted to ask was also about marketing. Now, you said, oh, I don't do much marketing, but you did a lot of work around keywords. Clearly, you looked at all the books mm-hmm. in the store, looked at all the positives and negatives, and you actually have created a product that people want, which in itself mm-hmm. is marketing. So this, you have done a lot of that. But what about other things? So, for example, are there book bloggers for colouring books, or do you use Facebook ads, or what are the other options for marketing?
Yeah, so all the things that you've said I'm doing, like, that's great. That's sort of the background work I think of it as. Mm. Marketing to me is the act of getting out there and being like, hey, buy my book, without being like, hey, buy my book. So there was a Facebook blogger who started up at around the same time that I did my first book, and she is now really successful, which is awesome because she's reviewed so many colouring books by now. But she was the first person to sort of handle and review my book, and luckily she gave it a good review, which I think has helped subsequently. I've also toyed with Facebook ads, but I've only run one or two. That's something that I really want to push in 2016, my own education of understanding how to do them and then following through and running them. I do have a colouring newsletter, a newsletter for my young adult fiction, my children's fiction and my colouring books. So that's three to keep up, but I figure you can't put them together because the content is so different. So it's worth doing that. And the colouring newsletter is actually quite good, to be honest. There's quite a few followers. And I noticed that when I was doing lead generation Facebook ads, offering the same free download of colouring pages that I offer anyone who signs up to my mailing list, I got some really good results. I think my cost per lead was about 13 pence, which was fantastic. So, and I only took a small punt on it, you know, 20 pounds or so. So it was good. It was encouraging. The next one didn't do so well, but I think you learn what not to do as well as what to do. So yeah, something to expand on in 2016.
Yeah, and have you done any kind of in-person, like, would you print a number of them and try and hand sell them at events or anything like that?
I did do a Christmas fair. It did not go well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a really, really small one, and I thought naively, yeah, I'm going to sell loads of books. My books are awesome. Who wouldn't want to buy my books? So I bought about £200 worth of stock, and I sold about 50. Luckily, I managed to then hand sell the rest of them online, but I was really disappointed with that. So for future events, I would definitely say if you do want to do a Christmas fair, go to a bigger one where you've got high footfall, lots of different stalls that are offering a nice diverse range of products, possibly something a bit more artisanal. So it's a bit more different and niche rather than mass produced and, you know, cheap and things like that. So, yeah, there's opportunities there, but I think you have to plan carefully what you're doing. And again, learn from your mistakes.
Yeah, no, that is fantastic. Okay, so the other thing I guess I wanted to ask is, do you see this dropping off? I mean, obviously it's going to have to drop off from where it is. It's been ridiculous.
Or was no, it? It's not.
I mean, but it's been crazy.
Don't like, say that.
But two of the top 10 best-selling books in 2015 were adult colouring books, which to me
it's awesome.
It's amazing, which is why, you know, and you're doing well because you are surfing a wave with something that you're already good at. So you're doing this, as we said, entirely with integrity. But I mean, what have you learned about the adult colouring colorists, as you say? And I mean, even if it fades a little, do you see this as a market that's just going to keep going?
Yeah, I do. This is why I've been releasing a bit slower than perhaps what I ought to have done, because after the first one, it was like, is it going to sell? Is the next one going to be viable? After the second one, well, how's this one going to sell? Is another one going to be viable? But after sort of following people like Joanna Basford and hearing about what they're doing, the fact that the traditional publishing industry is still following this and is going to publish her book in August rather than rushing another one out, because I feel like they rushed out Lost Ocean, her third one, quite quickly. And that made me worry, like, oh, are they just pushing it out now to maximise the sales, and is it then going to drop off? The fact that they've then said, oh, we're not going to publish another one for, I think they made the announcement about 9 months in advance. You know, we've got a whole 9 months before this next one comes out. That made me think, right, they've got confidence that it's going to go well for at least the next 9 months. So I think that that reflects for the rest of us that it can also go quite well. And I think for the moment, I'm just going to try and see where it goes. I'm just going to focus on that because that is the most commercially viable project line I'm working on at the moment. Mm. So focus on that, see where it goes. If I do really well, if I do as well as Janine Morrison, fantastic. If not, you know, we'll reevaluate as I think we indies do and just see what's happening really. But I think it's going to stay for 2016. I think it might not be as strong as it was in 2015, but I think it'll stay.
Yeah, exactly. And as you said, you enjoy it and it, you know, and it's kind of comes naturally to you to do this work anyway. So,
yeah,
you know, why not? Why not? It's crazy. So where can people find you and your books and your colouring books and your free newsletter where people can download some colouring? Because that sounds cool.
To be honest, the easiest place to find me is my website. So it's www.megcowley.com. I've links to all my free books and free colouring pages on there. If you don't want to visit my website and you just want to download my free colouring pages straight away, illustration.megcowley.com, and you can get some free samples from there. I also send out monthly free pages just because that's awesome. Who doesn't love a free colouring page? I'm also on Twitter at Meg_Cowley, and I'm on Facebook at Facebook/Meg Cowley. So yeah.
And the books are on Amazon and Barnes and Noble and all that?
Yeah, now I published all my books on Amazon, so everything's available on Amazon, and I've selected all the expanded distribution, so I presume they'll pop up somewhere on the ether.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for your time, Meg. That was great.
That's welcome. Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you very much for having me on the podcast.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.